Yes, sorry. Hi, I'm Jennifer. I'm Jennifer Clark Wilkes. I'm a senior role-play editor. I work with lots of different Dungeons & Dragons and D&D products.
I'm Greg Bilson. I'm a D&D producer. I ran Encounters last season. I was a player in this season. I've been doing some playtesting for next season.
I'm Chris Dulock. A lot of you guys know me. I'm D&D Organized Play content developer for Wizards. This program was something that I was designing last year, and I'm glad to see it carry forward. What I do with D&D Encounters now, apart from working on it day in, day out at Wizards, is I also organize the largest Encounters location in the world right now at Uncle Self Center in Tukwila, Washington.
And you should all take that as a challenge. So bring Tulak down.
Yeah, exactly.
You keenly violate fire regulations at this store.
We had the fire marshal come by and tell us we couldn't have that many people in the store. We've had upwards of almost 60 people in the store at one time playing or DMing D&D counters at the same time.
Yeah, well, last season our average was about 45.
Average was somewhere around 45, and this season, summertimes, the numbers have dipped a little bit, but it's still averaging right around high 30s, low 40s.
So,
yeah, 30s a really solid number. If you can get 30 people, that's awesome.
That is awesome.
Yeah, so yes, you should try to best my store. So, but yeah, I'd love to see that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah. So that's what we do with the D&D encounters. So,
look at that animation.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, couldn't come up one line at a time. But yeah, here you go. So every week you're playing D&D in the game store. There it is. You play. Come to the store, play in public. It's a great way to learn the game and show people the game and stuff. You can just jump in. You don't have to have been in a running campaign or anything like that. If there's room, you get a character, you go. And just play. One encounter.
How many people here DM sessions at encounters?
Sweet.
Yeah. How many people have played in it? Most people.
All right.
Great. Mm-hmm. So one thing I want to note on here too is it's weekly in-store play, right? Mm-hmm. One encounter per session. One of the sort of the design philosophies behind this program was that instead of having a program where you have a long play session or you have a program that you give the store materials so that they can run the program whenever they want, we did is we focused it in on creating a weekly Wednesday play experience that's only a short period of time. This serves pretty much two purposes. The first is, what it does is it establishes Wednesday night as the night to play D&D in your store. That's really critical to getting new players, because that way everyone knows around the world that no matter where they are, if they go into their local store, there's a good chance they're gonna get a game of D&D on Wednesdays. It's one of the reasons why we picked a day and stuck to it. The other thing is that the short play experience means the store and the players and the DMs have a lot more flexibility in like when they can schedule it during that day. It means that it's easier for a lot of our players and DMs to make it after work or after school, jump into a D&D game, play for a little while, and still have the rest of their evening free. It also means that for the DMs, much easier to prep, right? I mean, when you're only prepping one encounter a week, it's a snap, right? It's really easy. And the last thing is that it's when you're only playing one encounter a week and you're playing it every week and it's recurring like that, it's pretty easy to remember what you did last week. You don't have, oh man, we played for 8 hours and I don't remember what we did when we started, right? So it's nice from that consistency level too. It keeps things fresh. So that's just some of the reasons why we went with the one encounter a week format and went with the Wednesday night.
One thing I would add to your what you were saying is that part of the reality of D&D these days is that a lot of the people that started with the Red Box back 20 years ago they have full-time jobs now. They've got children, and this is a nice alternative for them to, if they can't fit in that 8-hour session or even that 4-hour session into their lifestyle, this is something that they can still continue to be involved in D&D, but can fit.
It can even bring the kids, you know. I mean, it's a fairly short period. If they're old enough to play, you know, it's not a mad, you know, it's only the one encounter, so they won't lose attention or whatever.
We have a number of parents who play in our local store.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
And I, what I'm finding is I run an encounters group at the office, and what I've been playing, what I've been doing is mostly people who work in the computer department, who don't, some of them have not played much, some of them do play a lot, but they all want to learn more about the game, and I always get their D&D on, especially since they're working with the computerization stuff, the tools that we do. So so I've gotten to know new people that I don't normally deal with. Kind of fun too.
I guess I'll say something really quick. Pre-generated characters, bring your own. This season, of course, we're doing pre-gens. If you've been playing any of the D&D Counters Dark Sun season, but going forward, we'll go back, of course, to creating your own character, and we're going to encourage people to create their own character. The Dark Sun season was something we wanted to do as sort of a preview for Dark Sun. Going forward, we'll try to sync up the D&D Encounter seasons with the product releases, so that they kind of feature, you know, whatever's hot, and people can build characters from some of the hot new things. We'll have more to say about character creation though a little bit later.
Yeah.
But are we still going to offer pre-gens at these?
We'll offer pre-gens.
Very basic.
I mean, that way if a new player shows up, right? I mean, yeah. I don't know about you guys, if any of you guys are organizing or even if you're DMing, right? You're probably seeing new players come in from time to time, maybe even weekly. And, you know, they're just dropping in and they're like, hey, I want to play D&D. And you know that guy, right? It's like, hey, I want to play D&D. Well, okay. You know, what do you know, right? What is your experience level with Dungeons & Dragons? You know, I've never played before. Okay, well, then I'm going to need to give you this tonight, right? So, you know, hand them a pre-gen, right? So, we'll always have pre-gens available because we always want people to be able to
just drop in.
Create a character or be able to play for that first time. And then, you know, you get that first taste and then you want to go back and create your own.
Exactly. There's no purchase required. You get your pre-gen, but... You know, we hope that after you've been playing, you'd say, oh, this is pretty cool. I want to get
so
the book.
So there's not going to be any more the game day type of stuff? It's all going to go through encounters then?
Game day type of stuff? We have game days.
Okay.
D&D game days serve a different purpose. We'll talk a little bit about those a little bit later in the presentation. We want to go over the encounters program to start, kind of detail that out, take your questions about that. But then at the end, I want to talk a little bit about some of the other stuff that we have for organized play. So we'll kind of give you a taste of that too as well.
All right then. We'll
kind of move
on to the yay social. Yes, sir.
That's an interesting. We're not doing this in a video. No, I'm just kidding. It's not that bad, really.
This is the encounters program.
Yeah. You know, find romance at D&D encounters. Yeah.
Just injecting a little humor here, but there's obviously one way we can spread the word about D&D encounters is through various online social networking programs, and of course our own DDI and our community pages here at Wizards. So,
How many of you guys are part of the Wizards community group? You guys use it? Awesome. How many of you are going on there, like, you know, on a relatively frequent basis, like a few times a week? Well, that's good. That's very good. So you guys are pretty informed then. Good. Good deal. Yeah, if you're not signed up for the Wizards community group, you should try and try it out. There's a lot of great stuff out there. A lot of the R&D folks and other Wizard staff members post blogs. You know, it has a lot of functionality, like a lot of other social networking sites. Very easy to use.
If you're an organizer, it's a good resource to encourage your dungeon masters to go to read about, you know, different strategies for improving your local program, because often the authors of the adventures are online actually providing tips based on the, right? I know Eric Scott DeBee as well as Nick Tulock both were on there providing direct feedback to people.
Yeah. They we have some pretty nice, hefty forum discussion going on from week to week about the D&D Encounter season. So that's just a great place to, a great resource to get any information about what's going on with it kind of in a timely fashion.
Another fun thing to do is to encourage players to blog about their experiences. I know I spoke to Dungeon Master.
It's dungeonsmaster.com.
Yep.
We do Dungeons & Dragons website exclusive to 4E, and I play in the encounters every week. And we do a summary every Thursday. I publish mm-hmm. what happened on the
That's
Wednesday
right.
before. We try and keep it spoiler-free just because I know some groups maybe can't play on the Wednesday night, or I know mm-hmm. one of the local shops where I live, they do every 2 weeks to catch up.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. we get a lot of good comments from people. And one of the great things about the Darks and with the pre-generated characters is you can really share the experience, and you can say, well, Yuka did this, and Shakir did this, and people know exactly what the character, who the character was, and what his powers are, and it much more so than with the first encounters. As much as everyone loved running their own characters, the experience is really different. You know, we had a lot of ranged characters. This encounter was easy. We didn't. This encounter was hard. With the Dark Sun, everybody's coming in at the same footing. So the write-ups get a lot more love. People have a lot more shared experience. Oh well, you know, our guy playing this character did this. Maybe your group could have thought of that. A lot of the other blogs also write, so the RPG Bloggers Network is a good resource to go and see mm-hmm. what other people have experienced week after week with the encounters, good, bad, or otherwise, but mostly it's pretty good.
Well, and that's one of the advantages that we, when we came into the Dark Sun season, that we were hoping to get from it, which is even though there are pre-generated characters, and people generally like to create their own character, right, they like the investment of, this is my character, one of the advantages, though, is that you can have that commonality of experience, right? Where people that are playing Shakir, right, they can talk about playing Shakir, they can talk about playing Yuka, they can talk about playing, you know, the other characters, Ulith or whatever.
That shared world experience is really a big driving factor in this program as well as in the Later Forgotten Realms. I know the players in one of my D&D Encounters game started writing a blog each week of the experience because he wanted some way that he could really interact with the other players in the group outside of just that normal 1 hour slot. And you know, maybe he still doesn't have the time to be involved in a full group outside of that, but it still gives him a way to sort of connect to the other players in his group and in the community in a limited fashion, spending just half an hour, an hour writing that blog, or going on mm-hmm. to the D&D Facebook page and seeing what comments yeah. people are making.
Well, of course, people are just tweeting right during the game. I'm sure some people are.
Yeah,
And the Twitter buffs, I guess, is something.
We're going to talk about that now? Talk about Twitter buffs?
Yeah, sure.
All right, so anybody using Twitter buffs? Only one person?
One.
What? Oh, okay. Well, I mean, yeah, that's what I meant. At your tables, do you see people using Twitter? Because, I mean, obviously at the table, it's something that comes up and then kind of affects the play of the table. You should. They're really fun.
Mm-hmm.
They change all the time, and it's just a great way to keep people kind of involved on a different level in the gaming experience. What we're doing with the Twitter buffs, and I'll explain kind of how they work, though, is we're actually kind of doing something really kind of fun and unique, right? We're taking our analog game, Dungeons & Dragons, paper and pen, right, in a store, physical location, and we're adding a component where there's this online interactive component to the game. It really makes it interesting and fun. What they are, basically, is every Wednesday, you're going to see, if you're on Twitter, which if you go to @wizards_DNND, that's our official Twitter feed for Dungeons & Dragons. On Wednesdays, every hour, you're going to see a cycling event or occurrence or something that gives some sort of benefit or changes the way the encounter plays. And those cycle through, too. There's a few different ones that kind of come up throughout the course of the day. And every hour they'll change out.
So, for example, you might have one Twitter buff that says players score critical hits on 19 to 20 for now. There might be that's sort of a more mechanical one, but you might have some that are really flavorful, like, you know, the sands blow in providing concealment
yeah.
to mm. players, or
right.
Delicious kank meat provides every
healing
surge.
Everybody regaining healing surge.
One of the other things that it allows us to do is where we might see You know, that the players are, you know, really low on hit points or healing surges near the end of a chapter, mm-hmm. we can actually provide mechanical adjustments mm-hmm. to help people sort of get through those last yeah. few stages. That,
mm-hmm. Or if things are too easy, we can do the other thing. So it's really cool because we're able to kind of react to that from week to week, you know, in a way that we can't really, like, obviously we can't send an email to everybody and say, mm-hmm. hey, do the thing. Mm-hmm. Or we can't, or you know, we can't send you a revised adventure copy, right? But it's a nice kind of way for us to react to people that are getting social. And if you have a table where there's 5 or 6 or 7 of you sitting at the table with plus the DM, of course, so 5 to 7 players. And if you have that happening, you know, only one of you needs to really be on Twitter, mm-hmm. right, to have that experience. Yeah. So, I mean, how many of us have mobile devices? A lot of us do. And, you know, as gamers, we're just more connected than I think a lot of the average populace is. And so, yeah, just to have assign one of your people in your group to check the Twitter feed, and you don't have to do it as the DM if you're the DM. What I do as the organizer is I make sure before we start our sessions, I make sure to tell everybody, hey, make sure you check on Twitter. Or sometimes, you know, I'll even just go on and say, hey, here's the Twitter buff, and just give it out to everybody and mm-hmm. just say, here's what it is. Because it's not going to change from table to table. It's going to be consistent for that period of time.
So the other interesting thing that Twitter has allowed us to do is the D&D Encounters hashtag. It's D&D ENC. And that is a hashtag that people are actually using to tweet about their games. And often during the game, they might say, oh, you know, oh, Shakir just fell down because mm-hmm. after getting critical hit scored by one of the spiders or something. And mm-hmm. and you can actually on Twitter search that hashtag, and it will say it will show you everything that people are saying about D&D encounters right then. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. You can look back, you know, a day's worth, 2 days worth of encounters. To see what people have been doing and what people have been saying.
It's just a cool kind of conversation point. I mean, I love going back and looking at it, and it's just fun to read them, right? I mean,
yeah, people post pictures of their games and then use the hashtags so you can see kind of how different people have set up the game, mm-hmm. what miniatures they're using.
So I guess when you're actually the Dungeon Master and you're running your encounter session, you know, things tend to come up. Maybe you find out that, you know, even though your group is supposedly a strong group, they're having issues for whatever reason. Maybe they're all strikers and nobody can heal them or whatever. Sometimes you might find yourself in a situation where you've got to adjust your encounters on the fly. Has that come up often with people here who are, you know,
Absolutely.
Running them? Yeah. For instance, in my case, that first encounter of the new season was pretty vicious, so I had to find a way to, you know, not kill everybody outright in that very first encounter. So in my case, I was saying, the Sand Strider are just going to run in long enough to get some stuff. They don't really want to fight too long, and they're getting hurt by the shards too. So the players actually had a chance to get out of there with at least some of their life intact. You know? But that sort of thing is just going to come up, it's not necessarily anything wrong with the way the encounter is written, but your party, for whatever reason, is just flailing.
Well, part of a factor in that is that you're going to see a variety of experience coming into a program like D&D Encounters, because there's the vested fan who's just looking for any opportunity to play D&D. They might play LFR, they might have a home game, and hey, they're going to join D&D Encounters because they can get to play D&D more. So they're going to be experienced.
It's just one or two more hours, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Just one or two more hours a week. I can do that.
That's how I sell it to my wife.
Yeah.
Exactly.
On the other hand, there's the players who are going to be coming into the store because they see a bunch of people sitting around a table having fun, and they're going to know nothing about the game. So probably more than any other D&D experience, you have the full range of backgrounds.
Even more. I think even more so than LFR, right? LFR, I think people kind of wind up getting eased in by getting coached before they really start their first game. And D&D Encounters, man, you're rocking and rolling, right? They show up,
monsters.
Bam, they're on a table, right. They're playing a game in a few minutes, right? You know, so they could be guys that are completely new to D&D with, you know, here's a character card, we're playing now, you know, have a seat.
Yeah.
What that does is it puts the onus on the DM to recognize the experience levels of their players, the backgrounds they're coming in with, and to be willing to adjust the encounters, to not necessarily play them exactly as they're written, to adapt them to make sure that they are complementing the player, the player's experience and making sure that they're having fun above all.
Yeah, yeah. That's all, and that's always the golden rule, right? I mean, we talk about it all the time. It's in, you know, it's in the books. DMG will tell you this, and you know, the number one rule really is, you know, just have fun, right? And so as a DM, your biggest job really is to facilitate fun, right? More than anything else. So you know, players will forgive, you know, rules faux pas and things like that. At least most of them will. And you know, but if they're having a great time, everybody's good.
And sometimes you might improvise with, you know, a setup or an NPC that they run across, like that little dwarf dude under the tree.
Yeah.
They're saying, well, can't this, you know, one of my characters batted her eyes at him for a while and said, come on, why don't you help us out, sort of thing. And he said, all right. So I let him give them a little bonus to their survival checks and so forth while they were traveling through the desert. Well, why not?
Yeah, I was going to say one thing I would encourage you to do is, because D&D Counters is pretty, you know, easy to prep normally for a DM, is instead of, obviously, since you're not using a lot of time to really prep the counter, right, you're only kind of looking over some intro text for each encounter and then looking at the tactical situation or whatever the case may be, take a few minutes to think about like how you would adjust it or what you do if there's some troubleshooting that needs to be done. So while you're prepping it, instead of just reading what's on the page and making a couple notes, you know, for the combat or whatever, just think about, okay, you know, I may not have the same group that I had last week, or I may not have all the same people that I had last week. So what would I do if, you know, this comes up or if that comes up, you know? And you could kind of see that in the encounters and see where you might make some adjustments. Like, hey, there's a lot of monsters here. I can pull a couple of these guys out. I can put a couple of these guys in if it's too easy, et cetera.
The start of the adventure talks about how to deal with differences in experiences from the players coming in. Like some people, they may have had an NPC die in one story, and then half the group may have had that NPC live in the other. And so it talks about using sort of the rule of majority on that. But it's a good idea as new players are coming in to kind of provide a summary, maybe agnostic of some of those details of what's been going on, particularly for something like Dark Sun, where you are going to have players who are coming in who maybe have either never played Dark Sun or never had a D&D experience, talking, you know, just even for 30 seconds about sort of what makes this play experience unique or what's been going on so far in the adventure.
Yeah, yeah. I always start, whenever I run my D&D Counters games, I always start with, like, last time on D&D Counters, this is what happened, right? And I just do a quick, you know, couple minutes, right? You know, where I just give them a quick feel for what's gone before. And even with my existing players, you know, if I'm running the same table week in week, they just like it, right? It's just kind of, okay, we're ready to play now, you know? We're in the game again. So it's just a good way to kind of kick off the session.
Now, of course, the converse of DM adjusting and, you know, adjusting the play experience to make it more fun for characters, I find the players also contribute to the game, at least in my game. We were talking about people who are blogging or tweeting about their experiences, and that's certainly part of it. In my case, I've got a little cartoonist in the group, and so I brought a few of the funnier ones that she had. These are mostly from our first season. We had a Warforged, you know, defender type who mostly got stunned. That seemed to be his job. They'd stand there and get stunned. So after a while, I was wondering if he's ever going to be able to have a proper turn, you know? So, but eventually, when we got to that final encounter with the wobbly bridge, and he's stuck there, this thing's shooting at him, there's a big dwarf in his face. He's saying, all right, I've had enough of this. You guys get in here, you know? So that's the sort of thing. Do you remember that crazy beholder? Somebody saying, man, that would be a terrific mount. So you know, they'd be a cartoon desk. This is the sort of thing I like to see when I'm running a game, is characters. I've got characters in my home, people in my home game too, who like to sketch out what their characters are doing and things like this.
This is really cool too if you wind up running the same group of people often. So, you know, there's kind of like these two sort of, you know, kind of, you know, opposite sort of ends, right? Some people will be the DM and for a group of people that are consistently there. They're there every week, that, you know, are playing it like they play a home game, really. I mean, you know, they're going to be there every week and they're going to continue to play with that DM. And they're locked into that campaign experience. And then there's a lot of other groups that, you know, it's kind of people rotate out, you know, the DM will just catch up the players. Sometimes the groups will mix and match, right? You know, you'll get three people that were at a different table last week, and there'll be another table at the location that I run at, because there's so many people, that's pretty common for a lot of the tables. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, hey, you showed up, you know, 10 minutes after the start time. We need to throw you on that table instead, so mm-hmm. because there's space on that table for you, that kind of thing. You know, when you're running a larger group, you know, it's almost like a mini con, right? You know, you're trying to get all the tables together, get everybody mustered, right? You know.
Yeah.
One thing I would add, though, about player contributions is that because we have this wide variety of experience, player contributions aren't always. Sometimes need to be curbed, because you might have somebody who is the very tactical power gamer who is at a table with complete newbies.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so as the DM, one of the challenges is going to be for you to sort of reconcile those two different those different degrees of experience, because you don't want one person just dominating the table, controlling the table. You should try to act as intermediary between those players and help the a player who is maybe sort of dominating the rest of the group to understand, you know, listen, these people are coming in with less experience. Yeah. Help them understand their characters, but don't be telling them what to
do. Yeah, and don't browbeat them if they didn't build it. Particularly, yes, this happened, you know, again, it's somebody built a bard and, you know, didn't optimize the bard, and so we had, oh, I can't believe this character, what? Oh, my boyfriend made it. Oh, I hate him, you know, it's all,
Yeah.
Hello?
Do you find over-optimization being a problem? I mean, that's one of the things I've seen in some of my own games at home since the Player Strategy Guide came out, is a little bit of over-optimization. Mm. Do you find that to be a problem when you run your encounter strategy?
I haven't really seen it to be that much of a problem. I have seen some groups that need the challenge. And then, you know, they're just like adjusting down. It's easy to adjust up. Usually I find that the over-optimizers tend to like run as a group together, right? Because that's all of it, right? It's not with D&D 4th edition, it's such a team-oriented game.
It is. That
what happens is you get the optimizers aren't building by themselves anymore. Like in previous versions of the game, right, you'd see the guy that would just build his character by himself because he knew he could be a superhero, right? But with D&D 4th edition, optimization has really moved over to the team focus, and it's like, okay, we're going to have, our group is going to run and gun this, and we are going to just blow this out of the water. If you get that, you know, that's actually a lot easier to deal with than a disparate group, because it's just, okay, well, we're going to go ahead and throw on the gauntlet, and I'm going to just be throwing heat all night tonight, you know, and they love that usually, right? I mean, for the over-optimizers, you just kind of have to gauge your experience, right? They love that usually. I don't think a group that over-optimizes or you know, heavily optimizes, whatever word you want to use, right, min-max, whatever, I don't think a group that does that actually really wants to just blow past everything. I think that they like it when they find an inventive solution that does make them blow past something, but I think ultimately what they really are looking at is sort of a mental game with the DM, right? They're looking for that challenge, right? So they want the DM to throw his best at them, just like they've thrown their best at the DM.
Well, and the other thing is that the reality is that players are only playing at first or second level,
right?
And it is kind of difficult to optimize at that level. It's possible, but you're not going to see quite the variety in optimization that you might see, you know, if we were playing 10th level or 15th level.
Right.
And it's not like going into your game day or, you know, an event here where you've got your team all prepared. Generally, you just got a random mix of people.
Yeah.
Did you say featuring the seasons using higher level characters at all? Are they always going to be first level characters?
Not necessarily always. I would never say never, right? However, since the program is designed to cast a very wide net and be very friendly to new players, you find as you move into the higher ends of the heroic tier that it becomes more and more daunting for new players to understand what's going on, and even for experienced players to pick up a character they've never played before if they're new to the program. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's that much of a challenge if a player, you know, if players come and they've built their characters, they might be very familiar with them. But we've even seen through some test runs we did, like PH2 Game Day is a good example. We've even seen that invested players, you know, that come in and have to play at a much higher level of play, it takes them a while to really get used to that character. While D&D Encounters does have the benefit of sort of a time element, right, where you can get used to a character after playing them for a little while, you'll always get new players, right, and you really don't want them to have such a barrier to get up to speed and be ready to roll.
If people want to play at higher level, we can funnel them toward programs like Living Forgotten Realms, or suggest that they begin a home game and continue playing the characters that they've been playing.
That segues nicely into...
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So
you're going to have players who maybe just only are coming to a D&D Encounters because they are limited on time. But I think as you see players become more invested both in their characters as well as the other players, the people they've been playing with on a consistent basis, as DM or organizer, it's actually a good idea to throw out the idea, if you're enjoying this, you can keep playing D&D Encounters, but this is going to be a program that's always changing. Mm-hmm. If you... want, maybe you should try putting together a 4-hour session on the weekends with those players.
Let's say your characters... Oh,
go ahead. No,
it does. Say, you know, we don't want to go into this cave here. We want to spend some more time wandering around in the sand or whatever, you know, and then you know, okay, well, maybe you can come up with a side adventure for them that you want at a different time.
The thing that's great about D&D Encounters, too, is it's also sort of this fertile ground for DMs to get comfortable with DMing. And as you play through the season, you know, if you're a DM or, you know, if you're an organizer that has newer DMs that are running D&D Encounters in your location, you know, those DMs might decide that, you know, I'm very comfortable with this now. I've had some experience with it. And, you know, there's enough hooks in each season to continue to run a game afterwards with that same group or that same theme. And I think that that's really... It's really nice to be able to offer that kind of option for groups that are dedicated to playing that way. And they might like to even continue to play in the same sort of format, which makes it easy for the DM to prep and be ready on a week-to-week basis.
One of the really interesting things that happened in my game is that the first season I ran and DM'd, and I'd been was running for these old guys, and most of them were in their 50s, and
were like old, like a lot of them were like old school, like first and second edition players. They jumped into fourth.
And one of the guys just got so enthusiastic about the program. It's so funny because he skipped over third edition, and he just kind of came to D&D through the D&D Encounters program. He's exactly the type of player we're kind of looking for, who was lapsed and was a little curious. And and now he's DMing Dark Sun, and he's spending all this time on the boards, and he'd come to me after each session. He's like, I read this, and I'm going to mix it up and do this differently. And he just got completely enthusiastic about it, trying to kind of recruit players from the Encounters program to play in a home game. It really... I think shows exactly what you're saying, how this can be a great way for DMs to learn about the program, or learn about DMing, learn techniques. You can sit in, maybe you DM one session, but you play the next week, and you can kind of learn tactics and tricks from other DMs. He sort of picked up doing like the initiative trackers on the top of the DM screen from me, and then he sort of adapted it to do a few other tricks that he'd learned from some other DMs. It's really interesting seeing the way that that the D&D Encounters program can be a resource for DMs, even experienced DMs.
And it's, of course, feeds right back into the social networking.
Yeah.
When you read other people's experiences online, and even as you're playing. It's a great way to transform and develop your game.
You keep mentioning, of course, that Encounters is played in stores. Is there any particular reason why other venues weren't considered for allowing, like, for instance, I run something at a community center.
Yes, there were good reasons. one of the main reasons is that we have a relationship with these stores. That relationship allows us to message to these stores very easily. It allows us to get materials to these stores easily, respond to these stores' needs easily, because we have a very good two-way communication. The stores are invested in making sure this happens, this program happens. And of course, you know, they're a brick and mortar location, right? They're not moving around week to week. We know the people that work at the stores. Our Wizards Play Network sales team knows all these people, right? I mean, they know these guys, you know, on a first name basis on most of these stores, right? So they know who they're working with. Everybody's accountable on both ends, both on the Wizards side and the store side, right? And so it creates a very good working relationship. There's that level of communication there. The other thing is, simply put, I mean, you're in the store, right? I mean, we want that to be the center of the D&D community, because not only is it a great place to play, but it's also a great place to buy your stuff, right? And the stores are happy, you know.
They're happy.
Yeah, the players are happy, yeah. You know. So that's why this program is specifically designed as a store program.
The only reason I ask that is in my own personal experience, where I am at in the greater metropolitan Detroit area. I'm up in the burbs.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have very few gaming stores in Detroit area. I don't know if you're aware of this.
There are locations that struggle with that.
Which is surprising for a city that size.
Mm-hmm. I know of a number of other large cities in the U.S. that actually do struggle with that. Depends on, you know, where you live in the country or in the world, right? Mm-hmm. We do struggle with that from time to time in some places, but we have to kind of keep ourselves consistent with this program.
Okay. Back in the back there.
Yep.
Chris, who do we talk to at Wizards if a store refuses to run it?
A store refuses to run it.
Even
so,
below, I talk to, they,
and they won't
well,
even.
We don't have the time. We don't have the manpower.
Okay.
Which makes it an hour and a half drive for me to go to a different place where I.
That's a really good question. So a store, you know, stores are refusing to run D&D encounters. That seems very odd, but I guess the first step is before you kind of come back to Wizards and say, oh my God, you know, these guys aren't running this program. I really want them to take this program. I'd love to have this program. Have you talked to the person that is in charge of organizing or ordering the program and really like sat down with them and given them the benefits, right?
The owner.
The owner of the store, you know, we know, and you could tell them this, right? You know, if people play in your store, they will buy things, right? They may not buy things every week, and they may not, you know, and they may not buy, you know, the whole group may not purchase something, but people playing in a store, they'll buy things, right? They'll you know, and they'll appreciate the fact that the store is a hub of the community. There's a, you know, some people have a perception, some stores have a perception that, you know, D&D players just come and squat and use my space, right? Mm-hmm. And well, you know, I mean, eventually though, they're going to start buying books. So I want to just finish up with this, because this is a really good question. In addition to that, right, I mean, I guess the other thing too is to go to the owner and say, are you doing anything on Wednesday nights? I mean, is this, some stores have the challenge where they don't have the space, right? They're doing something else on Wednesday nights. And I'll tell you, I've visited somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 stores since D&D Counters has launched, just to talk to them about the program all around the United States, right? I went everywhere, you know, California, here in Indiana, you know, up in the Pacific Northwest, out in the East Coast. I've been everywhere talking to stores and addressing their concerns. If they have the space, they should try it, right? They should try it. And all you need to do is just say, listen, you know, as long as you need a DM or an you know, someone to help you, I will help, right? I will put myself forward to help. If you're willing to take that step, you know, and not just be the guy that's like, hey, you know, why don't you run the program? Oh, I don't. Well, I want it, you know? Well, okay, well, what are you going to do to make it happen if you really want it, right? Well, if you're the guy that steps forward and says, well, I'll DM for you, mm-hmm. right? I'll put my foot forward and do that. And I've convinced a few stores to just literally, with with, you know, with their space concerns, say, just run one table, just try it once, you know, and that's really the conversation, right? Is, you know, I know you don't want to run it, but order it, it's free. It doesn't cost you a penny to order it. Order the kit, get the kit in, try it once. I'll DM a table, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And if you don't like it, then fine, but let us try it, right? And that's a pretty reasonable conversation to have. I haven't yet encountered a store that said no if they have the space, as long as they have that space. I think it's a really great question. Now, if you get to the whole point where the store is just reticent, well, there's not a whole heck of a lot we can really do to make a store run D&D encounters. But I will mention this. The Wizards Play Network, of which a lot of our stores are part of, and most of the ones that want additional benefits in our sales programs are definitely a part of, has certain requirements for reaching the different levels. There's three levels of the Wizards Play Network. There's Gateway, Core, and Advanced. In order to achieve those higher levels and get more benefits through the program, D&D Encounters is probably the top one or two way to do it. Because unlike Magic, D&D Encounters actually has a benefit in that a lot of players will cycle on a very regular recurring basis, which means it's easy to really hit some of those benchmarks. I mean, I see new players show up for D&D all the time, right? All the time. And it behooves the store, if they want to achieve those higher levels, to take this program. Because if they're already running Magic in their store, this is just another audience they're going to grab onto, and it's just going to be an on-ramp for success for them as far as getting to these core and advanced levels. They're going to get there much faster, and they're going to find out that they're going to have a lot more benefits associated with it. Going forward too, in 2011, you know, we're going to be rolling a lot more D&D programs out, and having that player base already established in your store because of D&D Encounters, like I said, it's the nucleus of the D&D store offerings that we'll have. That's going to be critical for those other programs to work in those stores. So I'm going to share a couple things before we get into looking ahead, because mm-hmm. this is a great time for me to kind of segue over to this. I want to talk a little bit about what I'm doing at Uncle Sal Center. To get people, I'm not using me as Chris Tulock, Wizards of the Coast guy, as a selling point for people to come and play. I show up. Most of the people didn't even know I worked at Wizards of the Coast when I was organizing, right? Because I just show up, and I've keep in mind, I come from a background that I have been highly invested in the RPGA for two decades, and I would consider myself a pretty good organizer. I've run conventions with hundreds and hundreds of people by myself. And things like that, but I'd like to share some of my experiences with you guys so that if you are in that position as either an organizer or a DM and you want to help your store out to get more people in the store and have a better experience, I want to give you just a couple of tips to help that. Your points are really, really valid. I'll let you know what I'm doing this season right now with our D&D Encounters program. I'll speak first to that, and then I'll go back and talk about finding players and such. But a couple of things we're doing in the store. The store owner has a discount that he offers when people play on that night. So when people play on the night of D&D Encounters, they get 15% off all their RPG purchases in the store that night. So that has incentive purchase in that store. Like that. So that's really good for that store too. So if you're approaching this from the angle of a DM or organizer, you know, looking to get a store to get on board or to keep a program, one of the ways is, you know, hey, if you could work with, you know, us to offer a little bit of a discount or something like that. So that's something that store does. Another thing that store does, the store offers an additional discount for DMs. I think DMs get 20% off, but they get it like on anything in the store when they run. So that's really nice, right? It's a very nice little reward. The other thing we started doing this season, after the first season, because we had so many people in the first season, and we were kind of running really tight on DMs sometimes, is what I did is I created basically a reserve status for my players. And what that was is it was something that you could pay $10 for at the start of the season, and it would put your name on a list whereby we would guarantee that you would have a spot to play at every night, because sometimes, you know, you can't make it happen. Yeah, we've only had to turn away one player so far. So, but it happened once. So I wanted to, you know, so.
But might be late and you might not get the table you want.
Right. So the reserve status, as long as they show up on time, they are guaranteed a spot. The character cards that came in the Season 2 kit, we gave them the character cards. You know, they got the full color cards. Everybody else got photocopies.
Chris, you should mention what the $10 goes towards.
Yep, I'm getting to that. and the players, some other benefits are, you guys probably saw there were those little Dark Sun cozies that were in the kits. We've raffled some of those off, you know, and I've worked with the store about some other tchotchkes to raffle off and such. So there's always that experience too for the player or for the players. Then that money that we've put up, and that money so far has accounted for $250. So I got 25 players decided to be reserve status in this store.
And in fact, my entire group that I was in during Dark Sun did.
Yeah,
basically, everybody wanted to play at the same table every night, and so we had six players who all, including me, who all put the $10 in.
Yeah, and then that money is basically going toward the DMs at the end, and then toward a pizza party at the very end of this, at the end of the chapter. So it's, you know, and if you tell players stuff like that up front, right? Hey, you know, if you help out, we're gonna give the DMs store gift certificates at the end for their time. You know, players are more than willing to be generous and throw a couple of bucks in once in a while.
Especially when you consider that they're going to be DMing for 20 weeks or something. Most people think it's a, you know, that's for like the entertainment nothing. They get, it's a nominal.
Yeah, I mean, that's nominal. Nothing, $10 per season. So anyway, that's just some things that we've done on the store side, like where you can go back to the store and you could say, hey, here's some things you could do to make sure that you're providing an experience that's fun for the players, that they have a good time with, but you're also, it's also valuable for you, right? So those are some things that we're doing. Some other things too, if you guys are DMing, some of you guys that are DMing, one thing that's really exciting, I haven't done it in the store yet, but it's something I've wanted to do, and maybe I will next season, is work with the DMs, create some certificates, and have a way in which the store can give those out. Like, hey, they make a purchase in the store, they get a cert that's good on D&D Encounters Night, right? That does something, right? And the DMs and the store owner can work those out, right? Like what those do during the game session.
Okay, you know, something we can talk about a little bit more
I want to also talk about one other thing for you guys is, we didn't really cover it earlier, is talking about, some of you guys are talking about like your stores aren't, you know, they don't have as many people, you know, for D&D Encounters this season, or you know, you're having trouble finding players or things like that. Make sure that you're using some of those tools that are out there. There are some great social networking sites available to help you. There are
Meetup.com is a really a good resource, because a lot of people have already started D&D groups. You know, they might be a 4th edition D&D group, they might be just general D&D groups, but posting, and you can set basically a recurring event every Wednesday that anybody can, you know, RSVP for, show up, they can see all of the details, and that then funnels them to the stores.
Yeah. We use the Seattle D&D meetup group. I used it when I first started D&D Encounters in the store, just to get awareness built. And it was very successful in bringing some people in. Now the Seattle D&D meetup group is pretty big. It's got about 1,000 members in it. But it doesn't mean that if your meetup group only has 50 members, if you're not going to find a couple players that are going to come in because of it. The other sites too, obviously the Wizards community site is a good place to go to as well. That information is plugged right in the store locator. You can just drop the link to the store right in the store locator. And you know, there's, I think there's a new site that Ian will launch, a Gamers Seeking Gamers site.
Yeah, if your store has a Facebook page or a Twitter feed, you can encourage the store to post it there as a recurring event again.
Yeah, I've seen a number of stores that have used Facebook and Twitter to great advantage for D&D Encounters.
And really, that's a good thing for stores to be using for just about any program. Yeah. If they're doing the Friday Night Magic or whatever, it's a great resource to drive people into the store.
You want to move
looking ahead?
Looking ahead, yeah.
Finally.
Finally, yeah.
All right, so we got the next season coming up. It's a little bit different format, I guess. Well, is it?
No, it's very
a
similar.
Bit longer.
It's very similar to season one.
Yeah.
So it's more similar to season one than season two. It is set in the Nentir Vale, but it is actually called Keep on the Borderlands.
Yeah.
So
that should resonate with any players who have been playing since
Classic
D&D.
Yeah. And yeah, it's going to use it's going to be very classic in a lot of its approaches, right? Mm-hmm. What that season features, some really cool stuff. It's going to feature the stuff from the Essentials, right? The D&D mm-hmm. Essentials line. Part of it is going to be on the character creation side, which is that characters will be able to be built from Heroes of the Fallen Lands. The book arrives on stores. Its street date is September 21st, but if you're playing D&D Encounters at your hobby store on September 10th, it should be available at that store so that you get a week and a half leg up.
Yep, the new season starts on September 22nd.
And the new season starts on September 22nd, the day after the Heroes of the Fallen Land book actually comes out.
And if you are going to your store, or if you're an organizer or a store owner, that's something to start to talk to people about as this season wraps up. You know, tell them the new season's about to start. This is the product that's going to be used for character creation.
Yep.
And then that help is going to help drive the next season.
Yeah, so you'll be able to create characters from Heroes of the Fallen Lands.
Or use a pregen.
Or there'll be pregens provided, of course. If you want a preview of any of that, of course, this weekend you can go down to the Delve and play the Delve, and you can see what a first level Essentials character basically looks like. They're very fun to play, and they're just neat. They're really cool. I mean, there's lots of seminars about that, so I won't really go into detail, but I had a lot of fun playing a thief. On my way over here on a train from Seattle to Chicago that I took, I played a Dune Trader thief in a Dark Sun game, and that was really, really fun. But the other featured item will be Monster Vault as well. What we're moving toward with D&D Encounters is that you don't necessarily have to drink from the fire hose anymore to make a character, right? It's going to be very focused, right? We're going to say these are the products that you're going to use to build a character. This is really good for two reasons. The first reason is that it's great for a newer player because they don't have to look at 4.5 feet of rules or even sift through a character builder to try and figure out what they can use. You know, they'll be able to either grab a book and build a character directly from that book, or they'll be able to maybe, you know, use a filtered option through a character builder that will already just, you know, kind of frame exactly what they're going to be able to use. So that's good news.
For the more experienced player, it's nice as well because it's going to be a direct sort of conduit to the new products. That you might not be able to start playing an Essentials character right away in your home group, but you'll be able to jump right in with the Encounters program, and then when your home group maybe starts a new campaign, then you're ready to kick that off.
Right. Yeah. So it's a good trial for the experienced player too. You know, I want to use the new book. It came out. You know, well, here's a great place for me to use the new book. Right. I can try this material. And a lot of experienced players actually like the challenge of building from a limited rule set rather than building from everything. The other side, of course, is the DM side, and this is where this really pays off. When you get into season three and going forward with D&D Encounters, right? We go back to that what we did in season one, of course. People are going to be bringing their own characters, right? Well, they're going to be bringing their own characters, and if you have groups like, you know, my group and your group, you know, where you're talking about, you know, dozens and dozens of people showing up every week, you know, you're not going to know all the characters. You're going to see all kinds of stuff. Well, it's way better if you only have a couple of books to look through, you know, to kind of get an idea what kind of characters are going to show up at that table than hey, you know, you have the entire breadth of the fourth edition line to pick from. Right, so we're going to be focusing character creation, featuring certain products. Also, the season, the play of the adventure will feature certain products. I just mentioned Monster Vault. Season three, Keep on the Borderlands, features that Monster Vault, monsters, and they're really fun. The Monster Vault monsters in general, Greg can speak at length at this because he's had a lot of. He was a lead designer on that one, or
I was editor on
Monster on that
Vault,
one. Okay,
designer on
Yeah, but he's had a lot of time with that book.
Yeah.
And basically, you know, what you're looking at here is very classic monsters, right? These are the most iconic D&D monsters in this book.
Yeah, you'll see a lot of monsters from the original Monster Manual returning in all, alternate forms, but still getting to those classic monsters.
Yeah.
You're gonna see
orcs and goblins and dragons and
kobolds.
And kobolds and all kinds of stuff in there, right? And they're gonna play, you know, they're gonna play even better than they did before because
you heard it here first. There will be kobolds.
There will be kobolds. Yeah, and they're gonna play really well. Some of you are probably aware of some of the things that we've done from the design perspective with monsters going forward. Those lessons are being carried into the Monster Vault and refined there, and that the season 3 and of D&D Encounters Keep on the Borderlands will use those Monster Vault monsters. It'll be really fun because it'll be a very classic experience. The season length for season 3 is going to be a long one. There were reasons why we had to go long because we wanted the seasons to really kind of sync up starting in 2011. So we didn't really have a good natural break point until after the holidays. The season starts, as Greg said, on September 22nd. It will end on February 2nd, 2011. It will be five chapters. Each one will be four sessions. So it'll be relatively reasonable length chapters. You know, obviously, just like the previous couple of seasons, you'll be able to take an extended rest after each chapter is completed.
If you're a player or a DM and concerned about the length, though, this actually can be good because it can give you the chance to maybe swap out and let another player jump in. There are some natural breaks over the course of the season.
Certainly
to where if you, like in the first season of Encounters, you pretty much kind of felt like the whole thing was one big adventure. This one has some sort of brief respites where that you don't feel like you're necessarily interrupting the narrative if you have to jump
right.
in or out.
Right. And what we'll do is, as the season progresses, too, we're going to keep an eye on, you know, we obviously get data, you know, on play numbers and things. We'll keep an eye on it. And, you know, if we need to kind of spice something up, you know, midway through the season, we will. But basically, with the season, we're going to be looking at a 20-week season in total, five chapters, four sessions in each chapter, but I think that, I mean, looking at the season, and I've seen, you know, Greg's worked with it a lot. He spent a lot of time playtesting it. And,
yes,
and,
we started doing some playtesting for the season.
It's a really, really
few weeks
good
ago.
Season,
Jennifer ran through it as a player. I was DMing it. It was a lot of fun. It really does get back to sort of a classic D&D experience. It really taps into that vein of Keep on the Borderlands.
Yeah.
It takes place in the Nintendo Vale, like we said. It's going to be along the Chaos Scar.
Yeah.
So there's going to be, I don't want to give too much away, but there'll be some various reptilian threats. But for players who have never played D&D, it will be a lot easier introductory experience. For players who have experienced D&D before and all its glory, this will really tap into the, I kind of like to think of it as that 12-year-old summer D&D experience when, you know, you were playing, kind of doing some dungeon delves, doing some exploring the various
right.
borderlands.
But it's got a lot of cool story to it too. I mean that's the other thing too, is it's not just, you know, it's not just about kicking down the dungeon door and killing the orcs in this season. You know, there's a really cool story running through it. The first couple chapters, I think the whole season's kind of the sub adventure title is actually Season of Serpents.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty cool. I think it's really great. Chris Sims, some of you guys know who he is. He wrote this season. He did a really good job. It looks really fun. I'm very excited for it, and I can't wait for you guys to be able to play with it. So I think that even though it's a longer season, I think that's very compelling, and I think people are going to really want to continue to play from week to week in the season. We are staying with the format we had for season 2. So what we're going to be doing is we're going to be parsing out the kits in each chapter. And then we'll go ahead and we'll give you what you need to run you know, the first chapter plus all the extra materials in that first chapter kit. And as the season progresses, we're going to go ahead and send you the other chapter kits. It's a couple good reasons to do that, and I want to just let you know, give you some insight into why we went to that model. The first is that it's a way to discourage somebody from really like blowing through the entire D&D Encounters program by having one mega adventure and just playing the whole campaign on a weekend, right? I mean, you know, what we're doing is we're saying, no, we want you to wait for it. You know, we want you to run it one encounter a week because we know that works, right? That's what works, is running it one encounter a week. That's what players expect. We want that, right? And the other thing too is it allows us to really kind of keep some surprises for later on in the adventure, right? I mean,
and there are some very big surprises in this adventure. I think that there's some fun twists that players who are going to keep going each week will really be rewarded for that experience.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to add is, I've occasionally heard the complaint that, it's just one encounter after the other, there's no real role-playing. One of the things that I think that this season does well is it does have some interesting NPCs and some interactions that allow you to, if the DM is so inclined, have some interactions either before or after the encounter. There's a lot of recurring characters that you're going to see so that you can really... ham it up if you want, or you can, you know, have those characters that appear in the first chapter, the second chapter, come back in the latter chapters and really, reward those players who continue to come throughout the season.
Definitely. Yeah, it's going to be really fun. It's going to be, I think you guys are going to have, if you're DMing, you're going to have fun running Monster Vault Monsters, first of all, because they're really fun. If you're playing, you're going to have fun playing the Essentials characters. They are really, really fun to play. I mean, I'd never played the Thief before and really hadn't looked at it a lot before I got on this train and played this character. And it was so much fun just playing that character, right? Yeah. And all the Essentials builds are so classic, right? Yeah. They really cut to the core experience of D&D, right, and the iconic experience that a lot of us remember with D&D,
which I think is which complements the adventure well, because again, it's sort of a classic D&D adventure. You're going to feel like you're in your mom's basement playing D&D when you were 12.
You know, some of us were 12 when they first played D&D. Some of us were I was 18 and playing D&D.
I was 10. So the next season after that will be the first full season that's in 2011 entirely. That will start on February 9th and it will last until May 4th. So that's a 13-week season. We're going to be going back to, you know, once we kind of have righted it where we are calendar-wise, we're going back to sort of the more manageable length season. The three-chapter model, basically. We like the three-chapter model, and we're going to move forward with that in the future. And then the next season after that, I'll just go as far as that one. That one's going to be May 11th. It'll start, and then it'll go to August 3rd. So that'll be your summer season, pretty much, or most of your summer season. And that, I think, is also 13 weeks. So, and then there'll be another season right after that, and I think there'll be another one that starts toward the end of the year. So there'll be three complete seasons contained within 2011. Season three will start the year, and then season six, I believe, will exit out into 2012. So
one thing you can expect is that every play experience is going to be a little bit different. Again, it kind of ties into that product rotation, but if you're playing D&D Encounters this season, Keeping the Borderlands, the season following is going to be a different experience. It's going to keep the same format, but you will feel like you're not just playing the same game over and over.
One other thing too, speaking of the seasons and the progression with them, I wanted to kind of go back to talking about character creation. We're going to kind of be a little consistent for the next couple of seasons, at least with the character creation, and we're going to say that basically the character creation for most of the 2011 stuff is going to be Essentials Plus, is what I like to call it. So basically what that means is, if you want to make a character for a season, you're going to be able to use the D&D Essentials books to make a character, and there'll be something else that'll be featured, right? So it won't be, here's everything, right? It'll be, here's the Essentials books, and then also we're featuring this, so you can use this as well. And all those products going forward on the Wizard side, you know, for 2011, right? Those are built sort of, you know, along the same sort of design guidelines that the Essentials stuff was built along. So they you know, it'll feel very natural to build a character with either just the Essentials or just the Essentials plus some other material. So we got other programs. I'll talk briefly about those, and then we'll take some more of your questions. Mm-hmm. We still have some time, so that's good. So game days are another thing that we do, store-focused thing that we do. D&D game days this year, we had one earlier in the year, Player's Handbook 3. We have three of them coming hot and heavy, boom, 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 you know, 1 month after another, because we had a lot of products we wanted to kind of shine a spotlight on and have a game day experience for. We have Dark Sun Game Day coming up on August 21st. Scheduling, by the way, is closed for that. So if you know your store has the program set up, you know, then they're good.
And Chris, you can locate a store that has it using the
The event locator, the Wizards store locator.
Is everyone familiar with that? Familiar, I guess, would be the better thing.
That's August 21st. Then on September 11th is Redbox Game Day. I actually have a little thing to show you for Redbox Game Day, so I brought that along. So, and then on October 23rd, we're going to do something a little different. We're going to have Gamma World Game Day, and Gamma World Game Day is going to be really fun and different. Dark Sun Game Day and Redbox Game Day are going to be pretty similar to what you've seen so far with Game Days. They're going to focus on an adventure experience. Pre-gen characters will be provided. And it'll be spotlighting sort of that product, right? That experience. So Dark Sun will obviously be set in the Dark Sun in the area. I think the area around here. The adventure is called Lost Cistern of Aravec. It's really cool. It's a very fun adventure. It's fourth level. And then the D&D Redbox Game Day will be basically a follow up adventure to the adventure that's in the Redbox. So there's like a 7-encounter adventure in the Redbox. This will be a second level version, a second level adventure called Sunderpeak Temple. With Gamma World, we're doing something a little different, and it's kind of a harbinger what's to come for D&D Game Days in 2011. With Gamma World, what we're doing is we're not only having the adventure play experience to be part of it, but we're also letting people sit down and create their own characters as part of that experience. Gamma World is crazy and it's fun.
Yeah.
And right? part of the experience with Gamma World is the character creation. I mean, it is such a wacky process, mm-hmm. that it's actually more fun to do it in a group, you know, where you can chuckle at other people's various mutant combinations.
Yeah.
So, do come to the Gamma World seminar.
Yeah, come to the Gamma World seminar if you're
remotely, more about that.
Yeah, remotely interested in it.
It's,
yeah, Saturday at 4. It is a really awesome game.
It is so much fun.
But yeah, the Gamma World Game Day, so it's going to have that component, right, the character creation component. That does mean a couple of things. The first thing it means is that folks that are playing, somebody's going to have to pick up the Gamma World box set, right, to flip through it and go through the rules. We're going to have a cheat sheet in the kit. So that it's easier for the DM to explain the couple of changes between that Gamma World and 4th edition. But ultimately, you're going to need the box set in order to actually create characters. The other component with Gamma World is there's a booster pack component with the game, which has Alpha Mutations and Omega Tech, which are the cards that the player uses as they're playing the game, you know, to do wacky and zany stuff. And that's going to be part of the play experience as well. Pick up a couple of booster packs when you make your character and crack them open and use those. Now, as a result of that, because, you know, there's a little bit of buy-in on the player side, what we're going to do is we're going to have a nice takeaway in the kit. So we're going to have a couple of promo cards for the Gamma World, that are Gamma World promo cards that are only going to be available in the Game Day kit. So, which is really cool because they're you know, all new content. and they're very cool, and you can add them, you know, to whatever you're using Gamma World for. One of them is an alpha mutation, one of them is an omega tech, and the omega tech item actually is in the adventure. Like, you find it in the adventure, and okay, here you go. You know, so it's kind of cool. There's some other really neat things we're doing with the Gamma World game day. I won't go too in-depth into them, but I want to say that there's going to be definitely an online component to the Gamma World gameplay, the play of the adventure, which is really, really cool. So I think people are really going to be entertained by it. So it's pretty neat. But so going forward for 2011, you're going to see things like, we're going to try to do things with game days that we didn't do before, right? We're going to move them out of just the space of, hey, it's just an adventure to play. And we're going to go ahead and add some other elements to the game days to provide a different, unique experience every time. Anyway, this is Redbox. This is the cover of Redbox. This looks familiar to a lot of people now at this point. A couple cool things I liked about this, and the character cards, by the way, those ones you saw in the Delve. These are the same characters, but these are the second level versions of them. So these are the second level versions of those characters. So you'll get a pack of these. I want to point this out because when the graphic designer did this, it was so awesome, and I loved it, and I couldn't believe he came up with this. So we built the dungeon with dungeon tiles, like we do with most of these adventures, but the graphic designer actually went and did a line hand drawn dungeon version of it. So the map, the poster map, is in black and white, and it's line drawn, so it looks old school. So it's really cool. And actually, it actually plays really, really well, because with the color tokens and things, it's much easier to see them on it, right? So it's like, oh yeah, I can see where everything is. This is really, really fun. So yeah, this is going to be great. I think players are really going to love the sort of retro feel of the game day. And if you guys are running them, if you guys are organizers, or if you guys are, you know your organizers, you know, talk to them. You know, do something to embrace the retro feel on the game day, which is this one, September 11th. Mm. You know, maybe dress up your store.
Dress up in 80s outfits.
Yeah. You know, bring 20 sliders and only go to 10.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You know. So.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, you know.
I can shave my head again.
You can shave your head again. Grab some 80s fantasy movie posters, you know, all those bad fantasy movies from the 80s.
Dragon Slayer,
whatever the case may be. Play the Conan the Barbarian soundtrack, which we all know is an awesome D&D soundtrack, right? You know, so, you know, that kind of stuff. But anyway, that's sort of the thing with game days. One other thing we're going to be doing with game days is we're going to be attempting, when possible, to integrate some of the encounters play in with the game days. So what we might do with a game day, for example, is we might have a game day happen before the encounter season begins, and then actually have you be able to export that character to D&D encounters, right? And say, hey, if you played the game day, you might have found a piece of treasure. You can take that with you when you play the character in D&D encounters, and the adventure might inform the way that the D&D encounters play experience starts. Or vice versa, right? We could have where the characters go on a sidetrack, and that sidetrack is the game day, right? Mm-hmm. And so that way, if you want to have your game day experience, it's all self-contained, it's great, but if you want to go into D&D encounters as a result, that's great too. In 2011, we're going to do two game days. We're not going to have a game day early in the year, so you guys have a long time before we actually hit our first game day for 2011, so after going bam, 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 August, September, October, we take a break from game days, and then we won't have one until later in the summer in 2011. And there'll be two game days in 2011. But we're trying to kind of rejigger game days under this sort of this new model of kind of bring a little more spectacle to them and make them to be, you know, something that people really want to go to, they really want to be a part of, and they really want to get excited about. Let's go to questions. We've been taking some during the thing, so I don't know if we've exhausted them, but I'm sure there's got to be a couple out there yet. Let's go right here first. Yeah.
You. Yes.
Right in the white.
No. I just had a question about how encounters are generally designed in terms of challenge level. You've already talked a bit about how DMs can jigger with encounters to make them a little harder or easier. But is the general goal with them to make an experience that the players are probably going to win and it's going to be fun, but it's not like super challenging? Or is the goal to make something where, like, especially as it goes on, death becomes a real possibility and you know, you kind of expect that players might really start to bite it.
Players?
So,
wow. That's a rough game.
Dark Sun was intentionally ramped up to some extent, but going forward, we want D&D Encounters to be the intro play experience for Dungeons & Dragons. As a result, to players who are very experienced, who are, you know, min-maxers or optimizers, it's probably going to seem a little, the encounters might seem a little easier than a normal adventure or an RPGA adventure. But that being said, we still want there to be challenge, because that's why players are not going to have fun if they're not challenged, even beginning players.
Right.
So part of that is introducing maybe encounters that have time components or that get scarier as they go on, so that there's still drama, but the characters aren't feeling as though they are going to be crushed every single session.
Yeah, I will say though, one thing about the Dark Sun season that I want to point out, kind of to keep it in focus a little bit, is while, yeah, certainly it was a little tougher, a lot of that also had to do with the fact that for a lot of people, this was their first experience with the new monsters. With the new monster damage values and things like that. So
yeah, they were surprised.
They were surprised, right? I mean, Monster Manual 3 had not even hit the shelf, I think, yet, or it just hit the shelf when that season started, right? And so as players get more accustomed, and what we're seeing as the season's progressing too, as players get more accustomed to sort of, you know, the way that those Dark Sun monsters were, and they're, of course, you know, built on the same chassis, basically, that the Monster Manual 3 monsters were built on, they're finding it to be a little easier, right? They find, okay, now I understand, you know, what we're up against. Now I understand what to expect. You know, when you started that season, nobody had an idea what to expect, really. So I think you're going to see, but as to Greg's point, yeah, I think you'll see that you know, with season 3, with the Keep on the Borderlands, we'll keep a consistency of play experience to keep it a little bit more toward the level of, you know, just having fun and having a good time. But, you know, there's kind of a pretty handy death rule in there anyway. It's pretty forgiving.
If you are a player and you're going to a D&D encounter session, maybe with a group of players who are experienced, and you want more of a challenge, tell your DM that.
Definitely.
That's
tell them. Yeah, challenge it.
Yeah,
tell
to
them.
The
throw
around
the gauntlet
tier,
and say,
right.
Listen, I want
know.
Want you to bring everything you can.
Bring it. Yeah.
I mean, I know in my D&D encounters group, we played through season 1 together, and the DM was running 2 sessions. He was running 1 at 5, 1 at 7, and he tended to go a little easier on the 5 o'clock because he got a lot more new players. And then the 7 o'clock was my session, and we'd had more experience, so he tended to run it more by the book. And as a result, you know, it was a little tougher on us, but he knew that we could handle it. So.
Right.
I wanted to just ask you guys about your thoughts on skill challenges. I found that obviously with D&D encounters, you only do one encounter a week. With a lot of the home games, with a lot of Living Forgotten Realms, the ratio tends to be 2 combats for whatever 1 skill challenge. And I know that with the first season of D&D Encounters, I think it was the 3rd or 4th week, it was predominantly a skill challenge, optional combat at the end.
Yep.
And that got really mixed reviews from not only from the store where I was playing, but also from a lot of the comments we received. Some people thought it was great that was being included in, and that part of the game wasn't being overlooked in favor of just combat,
right.
But for people like we had at the table I was playing at, we had a guy who had never played D&D, that was his first experience, and it was just all role-playing and skill challenge. And we felt that he really didn't get the whole picture of what the game was about. And again, some people walked away happy, some people walked away not so happy. Are we going to see more, not even necessarily full-blown skill challenges by the book, but are we going to see more skill integration into the encounters moving forward?
I think that depends on the interactivity of the encounter, right? I mean, I think that generally speaking, we always aim to make the encounters interesting.
I mean, my players, when they saw it was a skill challenge coming, they kind of went, oh, this, but they actually did enjoy it. Maybe that was just the way I was running it, or the way it was well written too. It was a good skill challenge. So they, at the end of it, thought, yeah, this was a good experience for us.
With season 3, I think there's a lot more skill integration into the what's coming either before or after an encounter. Maybe not a full-blown skill challenge, but at least an opportunity for players to use their characters' skills to interact with the NPCs, to find out interesting information that is useful to the plot. And then there's a lot of like terrain powers that show up in the third season that are going to encourage players to use their skills more in combat. So I think that it will support more of that part of the game. If we do support skill challenges, I think what you'll see is maybe a complexity one or two skill challenge before a shorter or easier combat encounter.
Right. Right, and I think actually the essentials I think actually kind of reinforces this as a whole. Right, you see like character builds in the essentials, you'll see with a little bit more of a skill or story focus to some of their abilities and features, and so of course we're going to replicate that in the play experience as well. But with that specific encounter, you know, one thing is that the reason why we threw in tacked in the optional combat encounter was for that person.
Yeah,
it was, you know what. This won't take long if you want to run an encounter with a budget of 300 experience points. You know, you can throw a few minions down there and throw a couple of goblins and you can have a fight. And that player's happy. Right? Yeah. That player's happy because they've got the tactical part. Or the new player understands, now here's how the combat part of the game works. Right? Sometimes leading off with combat isn't always the best thing to do with a new player. Maybe it is better to lead off with role-playing or skill challenge just to get them used to, hey, the game of D&D basically revolves around when you want to do something and resolve it, you roll a d20 and you add a number, right? So we're going to start with that, and then we'll go into a combat and we'll have a grid and we'll move around and do things. And so sometimes that's a good way to ease somebody in, is skill challenge first, then combat. So, you know, in that particular case, you know, it's probably something you couldn't have sussed out at the table at the time, but, you know, afterwards you're probably like, oh man, I could have, you know, we could have tacked on that and that player would have been satisfied.
And we are receptive to the feedback
that got
sure.
Yeah. And that's why it was added to begin with, because when it was originally presented to us, it was just a skill challenge, and we added the combat to get it, give it out for the DM.